So it's also looking at those other people that are further along on the journey and seeing, learning about them, I think can help us embrace our own journeys wherever we're at, and like being like, oh no, this, there's so many ways to be an artist, and there's really no, that's the thing. It's so open, you know? So, I mean, everybody can be an artist.
Gotta get messy and show the world you're growing as an artist, and you're free to be yourself. You got a dream, you need to start it. Stick together. Get messy says you're formally invited to a community where you can find people that spark the feel of excitement. Too many art supplies, not enough time. No, it's tougher, so you must find a way to feel some connection. We got a lot of people with the same kind, a great mind. We here for you, a platform so we can hear your views. Time's yours, forget chores. I know you bored of them same rules.
Hello, you beautiful creative soul. Welcome to the Get Messy podcast. Once again, I am freaking excited about this week's guest on the podcast. It is the beautiful Karen Almond. She has a heart of gold, and I'm really excited for you to listen to our chat today. I hope that you play this while creating in your sketchbook, in your art journal, or whatever you want to call it. Let us hang out with you today and let's all create together. Hello, Karen, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Kaylee.
Can we start off with you telling the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. Well, so I'm Karen Almond, and I'm originally from the U.S., from the L.A. area, but I've been living in Italy for, I don't know, the last forever. I married an Italian, wonderful Italian man. He's from Sicily. And so I've been living on the island of Sicily for the last almost 11 years now. But before that, I was in Rome, and I've traveled a lot because before I became an artist, I was an art conservator. And so with that job, I worked in different museums and on excavations. And so I had this adventurous spirit. I like to move around a lot. So I'm not that surprised I ended up in Italy, but you know, here I am living in Italy now and pretty settled here in Sicily. We have a son who's 12. And so, you know, having a kid kind of makes you settle down.
Yes. Do you still find like Italy is still magical to you?
Yeah, there's a lot of things about Italy that are definitely magical. I mean, people love Italy. I mean, I understand such a rich culture, so the history, the food, the museums, the art, you know, all of it is so inspiring and beautiful and unique. But, you know, I was never like an Italophile, as they say. It wasn't like my dream to live in Italy. It just sort of happened, you know, because of my husband. And then so yeah, I've always been very, always looking for those things that inspire me about Italy that are different from, you know, where I grew up. So obviously it's the history. And when I lived in Rome, I mean, Rome's an amazing city. So it offers so much. I love museums. So, you know, going to museums is one of my favorite things to do, and just cultural activities in general. So I'm visiting those sites and just like strolling the ancient streets, and all of that is so inspiring. And then here in Sicily, we have the sea. So the seaside, the nature, and you know, the volcano, Mount Etna, and all those things of food also here is amazing. Very different than Rome, but different kinds of things inspire me here. But yeah, it definitely is an inspiring place to live. But, you know, there's the good and the bad, like every place. So I try and focus on the good.
Oh, yes. No, I'm asking that because I feel like, so I've been in Germany for 5 years now, and I think I go through phases. Like when I moved here, obviously I was like bursting with inspiration and like with everything about Germany. And yeah, after a few years you go through like dips, and then you remind yourself, hey, this is like magic land, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel that way too. It definitely, you start taking it for granted after a while. You know, initially when I first moved to Sicily, I remember we'd always go on weekend adventures in the car driving around. And now we do less and less of that just because also my son's older, but I'm like, I want to do that again. Cause that really fills me up, like seeing new places and being motivated to do things, you know, and take advantage of being here. It's one of the things that, yeah, I don't want to miss out on. And it's easy to forget to do that after a while.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure.
So we're chatting today because you are currently hosting Sketchbook Revival. This is its third year. Am I correct?
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that and what inspired you to start it?
Absolutely. Well, Sketchbook Revival is this free online workshop. You could call it a summit. You know, it has that format of an online summit where there is a whole bunch of amazing experts, you know, artists, speakers who come and share during the workshop. There's this year I have 24 artists who have joined me. And so it's this collaborative effort. We join together and each day of the workshop, a different artist, well, really two artists share a session related to creativity, their creative practices, a sketchbook practice. But I use the term sketchbook kind of loosely. I like, it's sort of like the symbol for a creative practice for me. It's like that place where you show up for yourself and explore and try new things and discover different ways of being creative. And also there's that piece of like consistency and practice and discipline, a lot like what you do on Get Messier is my feeling. So it's like those two things, like being inspired and creative and discovering and having fun and keeping it as a practice so that you can actually grow and develop and really reap all of those benefits that creativity offers us. I mean, there's so many benefits and it really depends on what your goals and interests are with creativity, you know, what, why you're in for it or what you want out of it. But so Sketchbook Revival is sort of all of that. And the thing that I think is unique about it is like the diversity. It's not focused on one, you know, style or type of art. I really like to get all kinds. So we have like art therapists, intuitive artists, like people who do really realistic art inspired by nature or their environment or travel, or what else, like art journaling, mixed media art. What else? You know, this year we have people doing more like with architectural backgrounds. So that's really technical. I also like to have like at least one creativity coach, like somebody who can work on your mindset, because that's also such a part of, you know, taking care of ourselves as artists, like staying positive and all that. So yeah, the diversity of the speakers, I think, is what makes it such a rich experience and super inspiring, because you just end up seeing and trying new things that you wouldn't have normally been thought of doing, is what it feels like for me and what the feedback I get from the participants. And then at the end of it, like you're just full of all these new input. And so the magic really happens, I think, at the end, after you've done the workshop and you're like, okay, now what? So that's Sketchbook Revival, more or less what it is. And then why you want me to talk about what gave me the idea to do it was really like, okay, for me in my own journey, I was so inspired by, or I still am by people who have practices and those consistent practices. And they, you know, now with social media, we see on Instagram, people sharing like, you know, their challenges, like I'm creating art every day for 30 days or for 100 days or 365 days. And so seeing people with those consistent practices and then what happens to their own artistic, you know, expression and growth and careers when they do that is amazing. Like the results of like giving yourself that practice. And so I was just so curious, like, how do you do that? Like, how do you create that for yourself? And like, how do you find the right way for yourself to do that? And I was just, you know, really curious to hear from artists who have been successful with their own practices. And I wanted to learn from them and have a chance to like connect with them and then share it with everybody. So that's really the vision for Sketchbook Revival, what inspired me to start it out 3 years ago. Just, yeah, connecting with other artists, letting them share the secrets or the insights into their success, and then giving us opportunities to try different ways, like their favorite ways of creating a sketchbook or an art journal or whatever you want to call it, was really like the thing I wanted to learn. And so, and then of course, sharing it is where the magic also happens, because, you know, artists are often alone in their studios or at home. And so having that chance to do it together, like really share the journey, was something I was also really called to do, because I was feeling a little bit lonely. I think like I wanted to get out of my little bubble and like do something that could help others and like have a bigger impact. You know, I didn't know when I started what it would be like, but, you know, it ended up reaching a lot of people, and it's kind of like a movement. It feels like at this point, like people look forward to it and are asking me like, when's the next one going to be? And everybody's excited about it. So yeah, I feel like, you know, accidentally I kind of created this movement, the Sketchbook Revival movement. It's like once a year, come join us and like get inspired.
It absolutely is a movement. And I feel like you are exactly the right person to lead the movement, because you've got like so much kindness and heart and you're just so giving. It's actually crazy. Like, it's been wonderful to meet you and to see what you're doing. And I think that it's interesting and beautiful, the fact that it kind of stemmed from kind of like a loneliness in like a solo practice, you know, you by yourself, and bringing together all these people that are a little bit lonely and connecting them with art. And it's so beautiful.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so glad you get it. And that makes sense.
Absolutely. I mean, that's why Get Messy started too, is with like a bit of loneliness, right? Because exploring art by yourself is kind of lonely. And I think that having the internet, hello, it's like, it's fantastic, because we get to, you know, it's difficult to find people that think exactly the way we think in our town or in our exact location, especially as expats and especially as people living in small towns. But we've got this internet where there are a bunch of people that feel like that, and you can get people who completely understand you. And when you're talking about your sketchbook being like the basis of everything, I'm just like, yes, it 100% is. Like, I 100% get you.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah. Yes. Yes. I feel, yeah, I love that we have those parallels. It's really, really cool. And exactly, like, being the expat, you know, living in a foreign country, like, yeah, I speak Italian, you know, fine, but it's not the same as your mother tongue. And then having the chance to, you know, use my mother tongue, connect with artists from around the world, and yeah, be on the, like, create like the tribe of people interested in the same thing. It's really incredible. It's an amazing thing. Oh my gosh.
It is. And I feel you on the language thing. I think that's why like this podcast is a fun creative exploration for me too, because I feel like I'm losing my English.
Really?
I've already lost my Afrikaans. Like, I was speaking Afrikaans to my husband so that my son couldn't understand us the other day. And he was like, Kaylee, you know, you're not making any sense. And I thought I was just like, you know, hitting it. No. So I've lost that language a little bit.
Oh my goodness. That's crazy. Well, you have so many languages that you have to keep a handle on.
Oh man. Yeah. So, okay. Your sketchbook. So do you keep a regular sketchbook throughout the year?
Yes, I do now. Thanks to Sketchbook Revival. Before Sketchbook Revival, honestly, I did not. I tried many times over the years, because even before I, you know, declared myself an artist, when I was an art conservator, I'd taken a lot of art classes in my life. And it was always an interest and passion of mine. But I had other friends who were, you know, I viewed them as real artists. I remember back in the day and when I lived in New York, and I would just see them with their sketchbooks and they would take them around when they traveled or go in the city. And I was like, I want to be like them, you know? So this urge goes back for a long time, and I would try and then I would stop. And then I would try and then I would stop, you know? So this went on for many, many years for me. And then after the first Sketchbook Revival, everything changed and I figured it out, or, you know, I got enough tools, let's say, that helped me be consistent with my practice for the first time in my life. And so now 3 years later, I have a sketchbook practice. I do it pretty much every day. Okay. There are periods of time when I skip days, but that's okay. I've come to be fine with that, because it doesn't mean I'm not going to do it. Like, it's such a part of my life now that, that I'm able to trust myself that, you know, I'll come back to it and it's not the end of the world to skip a day. Because sometimes having that kind of pressure can be hard on yourself, you know? It's good, I think, for periods of time, but then it's also good to be more easeful, right, with yourself. You have that experience too?
Oh, yes. Like exactly that. I feel like, oh man, I'm just like completely relating to what you're saying with that. Like, just something clicks. And all of a sudden it's not like a thing that you're constantly trying to do. You just do it naturally and you trust yourself. If you don't do it today, you know, you're going to do it again. You don't have to worry about it.
Yes, exactly.
I think there's definitely an evolution to that. Tell me, what do you think your, let's say, three things are, your three tips for consistent practice? What was it that clicked in you?
Okay. For me, it was keep it really easy was number one. So like whatever your goal is, or your ideas for what you want to show up and create, like keep those really easy. Like, and just like the goal in general, like I used to initially, I remember I tried to do a 100-day project and after a couple of weeks I failed because I had these, I just got more and more involved. Like I started thinking, okay, I'm going to do 10 minutes a day. And then it ended up being 20 and then 30, then an hour, then 2 hours. I'm like, okay, I can't. And I got overwhelmed and then I quit. So it's like really being strict on that. I guess there's a time limit. So, or just on what easy can mean a lot of things. I know you're asking for like three simple tips, but it's hard to make this concise. But when I say easy, it's like, okay, really doable. So that's in terms of time. Like in my head, I'm like, okay, I can spend 10 minutes a day on this and keep it the type of practice that I can do in 10 minutes. If it's longer than that, fabulous. But if it's just 10 minutes, then that's great. So like knowing in my head, I'm just going to do this for 10 minutes and making sure the type of practice I do fits into that 10 minutes, you know? So for me, I choose things that feel, so one of the ways that helped me keep it doable is making my page really small. So that's just my personal.
Amen. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. My pages are really small and I started out with these tiny little accordion sketchbooks that I made out of like printer paper. I'd fold up. I learned it from Kyla Givehand on the very first sketchbook.
Oh, I love her.
Yeah. I know. Isn't she wonderful? And so, I ended up making this little mini one because that was all the paper I had, but I've just used that over and over and over again as my little tiny rectangle to fill up each day. So that's it. So I know if I have that tiny little rectangle, it'll be like 10, 15, 20, maximum 30 minutes to do it. And so that really helps me. Then the next thing is, I like to create themes for myself. And I also learned this from other artists, the Sketchbook Revival, like themes, like a series, like, so like right now I want to create just heart. Like I've done, you know, hearts, I've done birds, I've done, like where I live, like inspiration from where I live. Like right now I'm doing little people. So I like to do series based on my personal interests. So it's like things that are meaningful to me for different reasons. It could be because I want to learn that skill or because that subject just makes me feel good, you know, to create and connect with that each day. So finding a series that feels meaningful. And so like, I know I'm just going to show up and create that thing each day. I don't have to think about like, oh, what am I going to create today? It just really helps me keep it easy and doable when I have that series. Do you work in series, Kaylee?
I think if I look back, I naturally tend to do it, but I'm definitely going to take this tip and apply it to my practice and see where it goes.
Okay. I'm just curious because I'm not sure if that works so much for art journaling, but, yeah,
I mean, it does. Like, if I look back, I can see, okay, I consistently used these exact same products, like three products, or I kept using this. Like, I'm looking now at my journal, and I can see I've got like my last like 5-10 pages are all Lumo Pink brush pen and this like vintage ledger paper. So.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I love that. So yeah, so you can, it can be the materials that you choose. Exactly. And I've done that. I did collage for 30 days once, just collage from old magazines, just upcycling magazine images to, or colors. I would find the pages to make collage. And so that was really fun. And yeah, that was one practice. So then, and then number three is keeping it fun. So for me, fun is the materials that I end up choosing usually. I mean, it can be a little bit of the topic, but also the materials, like for me, are the thing that make me feel like really happy, you know? So it's like what makes you feel happy and good when you're creating. So if I can just connect with my colored markers each day, then I'm super happy and I want to show up each day. So it's like that thing that keeps me coming back, like, oh, goody, I get to play with my markers, you know? So finding that material that makes you feel happy, I think, is another way to help you stay consistent. So, and I've experimented, like I said, I did collage. That also makes me really happy. I'm moving into paint, like playing with paint more now too, but I'm still like dipping my toes into that, but I know I want to do more with paint. So that's something I've been drawn to, but I haven't like fully, I'm still stuck with my markers because I just love them so much. They're bright and happy. I love bright colors. And I feel like a kid again, yes, like that sound of the marker on the paper. So those little experiences that are very tactile, you know, are important for me, for making me feel good and want to show up each day.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Tell me more about your themes. Do you have, so you spoke about 30 days of collage. So you set a specific.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, a couple of times a year I do offer online courses that are more like support groups for creating your practice. Then I don't teach technique. I teach like, or I offer that container of support for sticking to your goal, you know, and then doing it in community, in a smaller community, because Sketchbook Rival is so big. And really that is a big accountability group as well. But, you know, that's another tip, you know, having accountability. So in these smaller groups, you get more intimate form of accountability that can be, you actually feel like you make friends and, you know, you do a Sketchbook Rival to the big group, but even more so in the small groups. So in these small groups, in one of the courses I teach, Find Your Flow, it's a 30-day course. And we do, you know, you create a goal for yourself at the beginning, a project for yourself that you want to complete over 30 days. So that particular project, the collage, was created for that. I did that during last year's Find Your Flow. And then the first Find Your Flow, I was working on the heart series. I did 100 hearts. And that was a very more like, finding inspiration from within, like based on your feeling of the day, and then creating a heart around that feeling. I don't know. What else would you like to know about this series, Kaylee?
Yeah. So, I mean, when you think about what your next series would be, do you just say, oh, I want to try this out? I'm trying to think of how I'm going to go about this because I definitely want to try it.
Yeah.
What will you do? You think?
Yeah. So what I do is I write down like a heartstorm or brainstorm. I write
heartstorm. That's a great word.
I got that from Amber, one of my teachers, Amber Monishi. Heartstorm. So yeah, you really think about all the things that you would love to learn how to do someday, you know, and write them down. So for me, or all the things that you love and want to try out in your sketchbook. So for me, it's like, I have on there a collage, I have lettering, I have painting, like abstract, like paintings. I have like more illustrative style things. Like I think it'd be fun to do like draw my son every day for 30 days or like my dog or, you know, so there's lots of ideas. I write down all my ideas. Mm-hmm. And it could be based on like even one thing that you love. Like for example, one summer, I'm from Los Angeles originally. And when I go back in the summers, I get inspired by being there. And one of the weird things about LA is that there's these wild parrots flying around Los Angeles. Wild parrots. And I'm in love with those parrots. I don't know why, but I find them so adorable and they're just so weird. When I was a kid, they weren't there, but you know, later in, as I grew up, they appeared somehow. Now there's these flocks of wild parrots and they're noisy and they're colorful and they have fun personalities and they perch on your tree and stuff. So I see these parrots everywhere and I love them. So I started drawing parrots one summer. So, you know, you could get your inspiration from anywhere, you know, it could be the thing you dream of doing or something that you see that sparks an idea or whatever. So you write all those ideas down and with no limits. And then that's sort of like your list. And then you look at your list and you think, okay, you just pick one. Like, what do I feel called to try out now? Like, what would be the fun thing to do now that feels easy and not overwhelming and like wouldn't take too long and all those criteria that I mentioned to kind of help me make it feel doable, like which one actually feels doable now in the time that I have available. So, and then just pick one and like, you just go for it. And usually at the beginning, it's like, you know, you're shaky because it's new and you're still getting a feel for it. And it's so fascinating when you do work this way because you really see that evolution. Like within 30 days, you'll see those first baby steps of like being a little shaky and not feeling sure of yourself. And then by the end of the 30 days, you'll be at a completely different place. And it's amazing. So this is why I keep coming back also to that series, because it really lets you see your growth and it really lets you develop something that's going to, that feels amazing, you know, and it really helps you see the value of a practice, whether it's, you know, in, even if you're in it for more like inner work, it's also, you feel that like you just get more fluid and fluent with your art materials, how you express yourself, how you feel confident and comfortable with materials and filling up your page. All of that will grow the more you, you know, just by showing up each day for 10, 15, 20 minutes on that same similar thing each day.
Oh yeah. Just by showing up, it is really, it's amazing how much magic can happen just by coming to the page and I mean, yeah, you just need to do it for a little bit. I love that you call it heartstorming. I call it brain vomit. So I think yours is much better.
You're hilarious. I love it. You always make me laugh.
But I think that that's like something that you're very good at as well. Like with your class called Let It Flow and with Sketchbook Revival, you're so good at finding exactly the right words for each of your projects.
Thank you. That's so nice. Yeah. I love the word revival. Mm. That, I don't know where that came from, but it was exactly the feeling that I had for the sketchbook practice. And yeah, I'm really happy with that word. And find your flow. I mean, everybody, it's not uncommon, the word flow, for us creatives. I think we all want to be in that place of flow. It's something we all strive to be in because it feels so good. That's another thing that keeps us coming back, I think, is that feeling of flow.
Yeah. When is this class offered? Is it available at any time? Could someone go there right now?
No, I offer it once a year, generally after Sketchbook Revival. So it's sort of like, you know, you come in, you do Sketchbook Revival, you get all jazzed up. And sometimes, you know, lots of people have experience and are, you know, they're like, I'm good. Then there's those people who like, okay, I need more support. You know, like I want to keep going, but I'm not quite sure how. I don't know if I can really keep up what I've started. So Find Your Flow kind of is there to help those people who are looking for a little extra support to really build that creative practice into their lives. And I generally do it after Sketchbook Revival sometime, like a month or two after.
Yeah. So if someone is signed up for Sketchbook Revival, they'll get that invitation.
Absolutely. Yes.
So in other words, if you're listening to this and you feel like that's something you want to do, you better get in on that.
Thanks, Kaylee. Yeah, absolutely. I'd love any, you know, I just love the experience of sharing the journey, you know, with others and supporting each other. And then sharing that evolution, it's amazing to see how others grow in their own practices. And I love finding beauty in everybody's work. Like, you know, I really am open. Like, that's the other thing about having the open-heartedness is sort of my thing, because I love, you know, working on that skill of seeing beauty and like whether you're just a brand new beginner or you're like an incredibly experienced professional artist, because we have all of that in Sketchbook Revival and everything in between. So like seeing the sparks of beauty and inspiration and amazingness in each, you know, person's work is something I love to cultivate in myself. And so I really love, yeah, sharing that energy with others during the small group. You know, I try and do in Sketchbook Revival, the big group, but it's harder because there's so many people in the Facebook group. But in the courses, I'm really, yeah, that's one of my goals, is just to really be there seeing that, seeing everybody, you know, really seeing them and their journey. It's like, it's really a precious thing. And I get a lot out of it personally. So.
Mm. So we just say like the beauty of seeing, like, obviously there's a lot of beauty in a prolific artist who's making masterpieces. Tell me more about the beauty of someone who's just starting.
Yeah. Just the courage to, you know, show up and do something, or, you know, even like my personal aesthetic taste tends to be very, like I love naive, you know, folk art and that kind of thing. So I often see those kinds of stylistic, you know, even though they're accidental, and a lot of people who are just starting out, like there's not that perfection. It's like there's something innocent in those lines. I can't explain it. Or, I mean, I try and go back to being a child in my own art, you know, so I can't explain exactly what I mean, but it's something like that amazingness of being the natural, wherever you're at, just naturally showing up and creating something in your own style. And like seeing those, often people have, you know what I mean? That those sort of naive look of a beginner, can, people might think, oh, I'm not good, you know, when they're seeing their own art. But I actually really like that
yes,
look. I don't 100%. Know how else to describe it.
No, it's a difficult thing to put into tangible words. It's more like a feeling, right? Seeing someone working towards it, it's just such an amazing thing. And I don't know, I've been thinking about that a lot lately, about the beauty of art for art's sake, instead of it being, I mean, everyone knows art is something to be looked at and that, but there's just like a beauty in just doing it. Yeah. And in just showing up and in just choosing to do that day for a few minutes and working on your abilities and your skill set and the tools that you've got in your arsenal. But I think that that's also why Sketchbook Revival is great, because if you are a beginner or even someone who's been doing this for years and years, you get to see all these different artists and the way that they do it. And you get to even if you don't do the exact technique that person is teaching, you can maybe learn a new way of doing things, or you can see the world a little bit differently. And so you've got the opportunity to take something from each of those artists and apply it to yourself. And then that's how you get to find what you love.
Yes, exactly. Yes, that's really it.
Yeah. I want to talk more about your art conservatorship. How do you say that? Art conservator.
Yeah. Art conservation.
Okay. So do you know that, what's his name? I think his name is Baumgartner on YouTube. Do you know his channel?
No, I don't. Who's that?
It is like the best channel to watch. He restores old artwork and he films it and he puts it on YouTube, and he like takes an earbud and like tweezers to clean the artwork or to paint over it. Is that similar? Is that what you did?
Yes. That's what? I mean, when I was an art conservator, I mean, I still am, because once an art conservator, always an art conservator, but
of course.
I'm not actively doing it. I only conserve things for my husband. I'm married to an archaeologist. And so when he goes on site, one of the things I do is archaeological conservation. So I, conserve the objects they excavate. But yeah, being an art conservator, there's different specialties within the field of art conservation. And art conservation is a combination of preservation, like long-term preservation of cultural material, and restoration, which is more like the aesthetic side of things. And so conserving is like both of those things. So let's see, when I'm an objects conservator, so to become a conservator, yeah, at least in the United States, you usually study the different areas. So there's paper conservation, paintings, objects. What else is there? Textiles, archival material, photographs, furniture. So, you know, and then there's then people who are doing like built heritage. That's a whole other world, like, you know, buildings and houses and like sites. That's another branch of conservation. That's not what I do. I do movable heritage. That's immovable heritage.
Yeah. So,
and people who do objects conservation, or, you know, movable heritage, often work in museums. And so that's what I did. I worked in museums in the US and in conservation departments, you know, taking care of the art collections that were three-dimensional. So depending on the kind of museum that you work in or what your interest is, you end up working on materials that, you know, are different. But I love that about objects conservation, is that it's really mixed. You know, you're not just working on paintings, you're doing, you know, metals and ceramics and glass, and then organic materials like baskets or, you know, leather, skin, feathers. So I love archaeological and ethnographic collections. And so that was what was, and decorative arts I like as well. So I worked in all those areas when I was an active conservator working in museums.
That's amazing. How have you applied that to your own art practice?
Well, I think, you know, that's interesting that you asked that. That's a good question, because I know that, and so not many people ask me that, but I know that you have to be very detail oriented to be a conservator, because like you say, you're using those tiny tools. So there's something called manual dexterity, you know, good with your hands. And so that's definitely something that I know that I can sit for hours and hours and work on my iPad, you know, doing an illustration. And that's like me being in my zone, you know, doing those tiny little things, or we're painting with a tiny little brush, something, you know, I love little details. And let's see. So that's one thing. And then I think the other thing is more like my interest in, you know, other cultures and through their cultural heritage, like those things show up, I think, in my love of like kind of folk art or naivety or simplicity in my forms that I use in my art. I think that I draw on like symbols that I see like on ancient ceramics or on, you know, kilims from Turkey or that kind of stuff. Those designy forms and shapes really excite me. So I think some of that, like I love flat. I'm very flat in my art. So those flat, you know, kinds of things that you often see, I like that stuff.
That's amazing. Yeah, because I feel like you were speaking earlier and you said from when you declared yourself an artist. And I was thinking, but like art art conservation. Thank you. My word. I told you my English is good. but that to me, like that immediately made you an artist. It's different.
It's more like an art doctor, you know, in a way. You're caring but for the heritage.
Clearly an art doctor is more of an artist than an art, right?
You're like, because you have to study, you know, it's fascinating. You study how art is made, like how you study the material side of things. You learn about the materials, how they're made, the technology of the manufacture of things, how they're made, how the materials behave together, how they degrade over time, and all those kinds of things you learn about. And so that's really fascinating. And it gives you a lot of knowledge about art materials. You know, whether or not that influences my work as an artist, I don't think it really does necessarily, other than, okay, yeah, I'm good at mixing colors, because you do have to match colors when you're doing that in painting, like, you know, toning, when you do that restoration stuff, you have to be good at matching colors. So that is a skill I have, but I don't necessarily use that all the time, because when I'm making my own art, there's something, it's a different energy, you know, it's much more like, I'm much messier and, you know, less careful. And cause you have to be so careful when you're a conservator. So I'm much less careful. Like, you know, I drop things, I tear things, I make mess, and you can't do that when you're a conservator.
I love that. So do you think that like making a mess and like just letting go, do you think that that's what makes quote unquote an artist?
No, I think an artist is, well, sure, I think there's all kinds of artists, but no, for me, it's more like somebody who's actually making art regularly. You know what I mean? Like just for me, it's as simple as you're just showing up and making art, creating stuff. So yeah, when I was an art conservator, I wasn't making stuff because I think that part of me was satisfied. Like I was, that desire to work with my hands, and it's very creative in the problem solving area. So it felt very creative, and I was using my hands and in contact with all these amazing artworks. So I was full, you know, I didn't need to make my own art, even though, yeah, sure, I wanted to do more sketching. I always wanted to make things, but it wasn't like a huge hole in my life. Then when I stopped doing art conservation, I had a big hole in my life. And so that's when I started making my own art. And so that for me, that was a big switch, you know? So it was like really dedicating myself to the practice of being showing up every day and making something is like, for me, what being an artist is. Like really, I recognize that it's a lifelong journey. So really like being like, I'm in it for the journey. Like I'm not just doing this here and there dabbling. I'm like, I'm in it, you know? That for me is what made the difference for feeling like an artist.
Wow, I feel like you've really articulated that well, because yeah, there is this thing where we're able to fill that creative urge in other ways. That's not necessarily art. And when you were talking, I was thinking about the fact that for me, I think coding and web design fills that creative need, because I notice that if I'm doing a lot of coding, I'm not actually physically making that much art. So it's interesting to think about it in that way and to think about art. I mean, yeah, my definition of being an artist is someone who makes art, but to think of it on a very practical level, that just thinking about creativity and thinking about art and stuff doesn't actually make you an artist until you're actually doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's the action, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think about this a lot. I think the other reason I think about a lot is because there are a lot of people that have that struggle to call themselves an artist because that word has so much intrinsic value and society puts a lot of pressure on that word. What do you say to people who don't want to call themselves an artist?
Well, what my heart says is that, you know, if you are making art, you're an artist, and it's as simple as that, you know? And you don't even have to share it with anybody necessarily to call yourself an artist. You know, it's really up to you what you feel, what makes you feel good about making art and how you want to make art. And, you know, if you want to share it or not, it doesn't really matter. I think you can still be an artist. But for me, I definitely like the idea of sharing it, you know, and using it to have an impact somehow, you know, beyond myself. But that's not for everybody, but you're still an artist, you know, just if you're making art. For me, that's seriously my, but I understand it's hard to claim that because, like you say, there's so many, it just feels like it's so easy to feel like I'm not a real artist. For me, that fear or that insecurity comes from like not having gone to art school. Like I took art classes. Yes, I went to art conservation school, but I didn't go to art school. So not having a formal training of art school, I think maybe for me is my personal, that inner critic saying you're not a real artist. But I've learned that there's so many artists I admire who also didn't go to art school, you know? So it's also looking at those other people that are further along on the journey and learning about them, I think can help us embrace our own journeys wherever we're at and like being like, oh no, there's so many ways to be an artist. And there's really no, that's the thing. It's so open, you know? So, I mean, everybody can be an artist.
Amen. Amen. You just need to want to, and then put it into action.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that is great. Something great to end on. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and your heart with us. And thank you so much for putting together Sketchbook Revival and everything that you do for the community. I think you are an amazing person and I think what you're doing is amazing. And every single person listening to this needs to hop on that. It is Sketchbook Revival is totally free. There are zero excuses. You can do it at home with no pants on, with the tools that you have.
Yes. Thank you, Kaylee. Thank you so much for inviting me onto your podcast. It's been, what an honor and just so lovely to chat with you and get to know you. And I'm so inspired by what you do. So I just feel like, this is so wonderful. Thank you very much for having me. And it was just a delight to chat with you. Like we say, to share these conversations with others that are doing something similar. You know, it's so inspiring and it's important. So thank you very much.